Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Optimize Your Body podcast. And some of the guests we've got on lately are just absolutely insane. And it's super, I feel really, really, grateful to have Lily Kane here today. I really love your content. Before we get into this, I really love your content, Lily, right? It actually is super entertaining and it's valuable as well. And it's like, I can see how much effort goes into it, because when you look at the video, the end product, I see it, but I know I'm a creator myself as well. And I see all the little clips that you do in different parts. And I'm like, that takes a lot longer and there's a lot more work than it looks like in that 30 second or 1 minute video, you know?
Oh yeah, yeah. People don't see the behind the scenes. Just like the filming part of it maybe takes an hour, and then like the editing is like a whole day.
Exactly. The editing and brushing things up. But I'm sure you just get it in one take every time, don't you, Lily? Let's be honest. One take, done.
Well, I wish I could say that. Depends on what it is. If it's a YouTube video, absolutely not. A 10-minute YouTube video takes me an hour to film.
Like, yeah, the YouTube.
Hey. It's like people don't see how you have to like the change in your tone. And then like, do I look like I have like resting, you know, bee face right now? So you got to make sure you're looking at, you know, not like you're just waking up and all that stuff. Yeah.
Love it. It's awesome. But yeah, I just want to introduce you quickly. Now, Lily is a certified health and nutrition life coach who specializes in optimizing micronutrient intake and boosting one's metabolism. While diet is an incredibly important pillar for building one's health, Lily also implements other lifestyle habits that contribute to her health and happiness, like strength training, sauna, giving gratitude, and taking walks outside in nature. Now, I wasn't going to read out the whole spiel on your website. I just wanted to make it short and sweet, because sometimes I can talk for like 10 minutes and the guest is like falling asleep. Hey, but welcome to the show, Lydia. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to chat.
Yeah, me too. Me too. But yeah, again, would you mind just giving the audience a bit more of an insight into, you know, your journey, I guess, you know, a bit more about yourself, which part of the States you're located and everything else, because 50% of my podcast listeners are in the States anyway.
So I grew up in San Diego, California. My mom and dad, they really tried their best, but they were both addicted to drugs and alcohol. So a relationship like that doesn't really last for too long. So by the time I was actually only like 3 years old, they were already getting a divorce. So my mom ended up getting custody and my dad ended up not really coming around anymore or trying to see my sister and I. And so my mom raised my sister and I by herself. I have no idea who my dad is or any side of his family, grandparents, blood history, anything, genetics on that side. Haven't spoken with him since I was like six. My mom still, she'd really tried her best as a single parent, but she, with her addiction, always had different men in and out of the house. The police were over all the time. There was times of rape, abuse, verbal, physical. And so I really just tried my best to involve myself in different things that were so positive to distract me from going home, because going home was like my least favorite thing. So I was in theater, track, volleyball, photography, involved in the church as a deacon and greeter, in volunteer club. I was trying to keep myself busy with all of these fun activities. And because my mom had a really hard time keeping a job due to her addiction, we ended up growing up on food stamps. So I was really poor. We would go grocery shopping here in the US at a thing called the 99-cent store or the Dollar Tree to get our food. And I grew up, because of that, in a very low calorie state. So in a way, it was a blessing that I didn't have an abundance of junk food, like sodas and candies and cookies, just because we didn't have the money to have those extra things. So I actually grew up very, very skinny and lean. So to the average person, they're like, oh, that's really nice. You didn't have to go through the overweight stage. But yet I was still teased for being toothpick legs, flat chested, anorexic, skinny girl who, I was like underdeveloped. My jaw was really narrow. I had headgear, braces, rubber bands. I had a neck brace. I was late on my menstrual cycle. I was a late bloomer. I had lots of acne. So I was like small, but I had different health consequences as a result. I ended up becoming what's called an emancipated minor here in the US, where I moved out of my mom's house officially when I was 16 years old, and we have never spoken since. She said she never wanted to see my sister and I ever again. Again, addiction, alcohol, drugs, not in her best interest and in many people's interest as well, but it was really extreme in this case. So I became officially an adult when I was 16 years old. And by the time I graduated high school, I was 17. I moved to Minnesota to go to college. My background's actually in economics and management. After I froze my booty off in Minnesota for 4 years, I moved to Hawaii. Though while I was in college, I finally had access to an abundance of food, the all-you-can-eat buffet. I gained 15 pounds my freshman year. I was actually really happy about this because I always had heard that guys like girls who are thicker and who have curves and the thighs and the buns and all of that. And I so desperately wanted someone to love me because I, you know, didn't have family. I was just really desperate for love. And so whatever a man wanted me to look like or be like, I wanted to do that. But I was also a track and field athlete while I was in college for the 4 years. So I was able to go through periods where I was eating tons and tons of food, alcohol, chips, pizzas, all the goodies, and still look lean, even though at that point now I'm having yeast infections, UTIs, joint pain, irritability, mood swings, energy crashes, having to take a nap every day, having different kinds of health implications that I thought were just natural and normal. I thought, oh, hey, I get sick 3 to 4 times a year with a stuffy nose, sore throat, headache, cough, all the different sicknesses 3 or 4 times a year because, hey, that's just what happens when it's winter or when you're around other people who are sick or when you are, it's just genetics. And I didn't realize that the food that I was eating was really impacting my health in that way. After I graduated college, I moved to Hawaii and I continued with my eating habits and my drinking alcohol and ended up now my body that was a track athlete, I said, I'm not running anymore because my joints are in so much pain from running, which really it was from ancillary things like alcohol and processed foods and things contributing to my inflammation and my joint pain. So I started seeing that I was no longer having muscle and now I'm having a little bit more fat. Now, granted, I, you know, was never a overweight person because by the time I was 22 at this point, now having graduated and living in Hawaii, I met my husband, my now husband, and he had already done all the different kinds of diets, vegan, fruitarian, vegetarian, paleo, Mediterranean, keto. He had already done all the different kinds of diets. He knew what exactly was optimal for his health. And so when I met him, he was eating really healthy and clean, no alcohol, no pizza, no chips, no processed food whatsoever. And so I would have to take my jar of cookie dough and put it in his freezer so I could have something to eat while you're watching a movie because, oh my goodness, of course you need to have dessert every night to be happy. And so being around him, I really started reflecting on my actions and the things that I was doing with my food and was questioning, why doesn't he need the donut? How come he doesn't need to have Mexican food every single day? So like it made me question what I was doing and being around him really influenced me to make positive decisions and food choices for myself.
I love that you mentioned that with your husband as well. So much I want to talk about there, but I really appreciate you sharing that stuff with your childhood as well, because there's always, you never really guess, you know, you see people online and stuff like that, right? And you never know what they've been through because it shaped you. You know, it was obviously really, really tough for you and everything else, but it shaped who you are. And obviously we're going straight in here, right? I'm not going to go to, I've shared it a few times on mine, but some of that I can relate to myself. I mean, in terms of like my dad wasn't around, he wasn't around at all. And single mother and all that kind of stuff. And my mum struggled with addiction as well for a couple of years. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to just, if you don't mind, just talking a little bit on that, because you said from 3, your parents got divorced, right? Mm-hmm. 3 years old, your parents got divorced. And then obviously you left home at 16, never spoke to your mum and everything else. And it's so interesting in terms of how your relationship with food was shaped as well, with, you know, not having much when you were younger, not having food and all that kind of, or not having enough food and obviously being essentially malnourished, right? How did you, like from when you moved out, from when you were 16, you said you moved out at 16, right? I know you said you haven't spoken to your mother since you were 16. Is that when you moved out, right?
Yeah.
So you moved out from then. And then how did you kind of like, what was your mindset with food then? Was it like you were alluding to then, I've got to eat as much as I can because you've got that, even if it's in your subconscious mind, it's like, I haven't got much food coming. I've got to eat the hell out of everything, plus environment with university and everything else. So did you find that you were then just eating way more than you needed to, eating a bunch of ultra-processed foods? And what about alcohol as well? I'd love to just talk a bit more on that from like 16 onwards, you know, into your studies and stuff.
Yes. So when I was 16, I was still in high school. So I actually moved in with, ironically, it's a long story, my mom's ex-boyfriend. So they were never married. Long story, he is my version of a dad. So... he and his now wife were like my caregivers. And so we just had like, they didn't have a lot of money either. They were younger. So my mom's ex-boyfriend who I lived with, his name's John. He was 13 years younger than my mom and his wife is 7 years younger than him. And so nowadays my mom and dad, with my husband being 9 years older than me, his now mother-in-law is 1 year older than him. So it's an interesting family dynamic, but nonetheless.
That is an interesting one.
So, and they have their own children nowadays too. So I have like two little baby sisters who are 9 and 6. So anyway, I moved in with them when I was 16. They didn't have a lot of money because they were younger. They had just like graduated college. So we ate lots of like pasta, top ramen. So like the affordable things. Cheap foods, but I never like sought out food as like a way to relieve stress. I don't think that was like really me. I know some people, they do cope with food or use food as a coping mechanism. That really wasn't me. And then when I went to college, it's like when you finally get that all you can eat buffet and you're like, ooh, I can have pizza today and I can have pancakes with waffles and cereal and oatmeal and one of everything. But I guess I was hungry for it back then because I was not very conscious. So I didn't realize the foods that I was eating back then and how they were affecting me. I just said, this is what everybody else is eating. This is the environment I'm in. This is the foods that they're offering me at my school. And I did intentionally say, I'm going to have broccoli and I'm going to have spinach and I'm going to have a banana and like do the healthy things. But then I could justify my actions as to like, and now I'm going to have a Cocoa Puff cereal with honey and peanut butter and then cookies and cake and pie and dessert and brownies and all that stuff. And I used to think things like raisins was like a snack, a healthy snack. Meanwhile, I had no idea that it's loaded with tons of sugars and things. So I think it's just, I had no idea. And I didn't think anything of it because everybody else was eating it too. So I would have felt like a weirdo if I would have been like, I shouldn't be eating goldfish when that was like one of my staples.
I love it.
As far as alcohol goes, I actually was really afraid and nervous to ever drink because of watching my mom and seeing kind of like, for lack of a better word, the monster she had turned into with it. And so I was like really nervous that I was going to become like a crazy person too. So I actually didn't drink until I was 20 and I actually went and got to study abroad from my college and go live in Scotland and attend the University of Aberdeen in Scotland. And so
sorry to interrupt, Brian. I'm from the UK, so I'm from Wales originally.
Okay.
So I've been to Edinburgh, but what was that like? Just without going off too much on, what was that like living in Scotland?
So to be honest, I was actually like really depressed over there because
Aberdeen as well, there's not much going on there, is it? It's not like you're in Glasgow or Edinburgh. You're in the middle of nowhere, right?
There was not much going on. I was used to, in my college, having a roommate. And in these, it was like you had your own individual room. It was like harder to meet people. Plus, everyone knew
that
I was only there for 3 months. So it wasn't like I had a lot of friends. And I was like on track and field in my college. So then I would go and do track and field by myself at the gym in Aberdeen. So I just felt really lonely. Like in my college, we used to everybody eat in a cafeteria. Where I was living in Scotland, I had to make my own meals and eat by myself. So It was like
fun. Character building, I guess, right? Challenging as hell. And the weather, just to top it off, It gets cold up there.
Yeah.
You know I mean, cold and dark.
Yeah. What was really nice is I actually only had classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I would leave on Thursday evening and go to a different country. And then I would come back for a class. So I went to 10 different countries while I was living there. So that was like the big highlight is being able to go to Rome and UK and Ireland, Spain, Romania.
That's the good thing, right? Because people from America especially don't realize, if you haven't been to Europe, if you have, you understand. But from where I live in the UK, you can get everywhere within 2 to 3 hours. Literally, most countries in Europe you can get to, right?
Yep.
So that's great. That was one pro then.
that was really fun. But because I was in Europe, I was actually legal to drink at that point.
Of course, because it's 18 in Europe, it's 21 in the US, right?
Yep. So then I did legally drink when I was there, like a few times. Like I went to
Berlin in Germany. Berlin is great.
It's the drinking fest, not the drinking fest.
Oktoberfest, is that right?
Yes.
Is it in Munich?
It is in Munich. I was in Berlin. Like popping off all over Germany. So it's like there was different events that I was going to where it was like you would drink, but it's not like I was like drinking every day. But it was like more than I was used to in being in school. And then when I went back to the U.S., then I did like continue with like drinking every weekend and like being a part of the cool kids, because I used to like, even though it's not legal to drink in the U.S. when you're 18, like you do have access to it when you're in college. And I would just go to the parties and I'd be with the people who were all drinking and I would be the sober girl because I was like, I'm not going to drink, which I'm very glad I didn't. But then once I realized, oh my gosh, I'm not going to turn into a monster when I drink, then I was like, okay, cool, I can get away with doing it. And I would do it every weekend until I met my husband. He was like, yeah, I don't do that. I'm like, oh, thank God, because I actually hate the taste. I don't like the cost, and it makes me feel awful.
100%, 100%. And yeah, I can relate to so much you were saying that in terms of the complications of your family. And like, what did you say in terms of who was older than who? Sorry, with because I know your mother's boyfriend was 13 years younger.
Yep, and then his wife is 7 years younger, and then my husband's 9 years older than me. So it's like my husband and mom is 1 year apart.
Wow, yeah, because my it's just like I've got two half sisters, right? So my mum's name is Paula Lovelock, my sister's name is Kirsty Burnett, my name is Martin Silva. Then I have a half sister then from my dad's side called Serena Charles. So there's like four. We've all got different surnames. So I totally understand the complications, but I'd love to get into, because I love the post that you put up as well. You put a few up with your husband, and it's so, I mean, lucky for both of you, right? You both seem like you're a really good fit and everything else. Obviously you got married and everything else, but you were 22 when you met your husband, and he was really healthy, really conscious of what he ate. You said he ate all whole foods. Oh, yeah. So that's literally shaped everything for you as well, right? Because especially when you admire someone and respect someone, you want to do what they're doing, or you at least want to, basically, it's environment, right? It all comes down to environment. So number one, I'd love to know how big an impact that was, meeting your husband, in terms of your relationship with food, your relationship with yourself, and just growth in general. Let's start there. And then I wanted to kind of transition into just talking on environment and the impact on clients. But yeah, sorry, let's just backpedal and start off with our first question.
Yeah,
if you can remember it, that was a lot.
Yeah. So when I first met him, I was eating my processed junk food diet, didn't know anything, you know, that I wasn't doing. It was like, if you look lean, then you're healthy kind of thing. Not that like I had all these other things going on underneath the surface and I didn't realize it. And I didn't think that you could even like get rid of joint pain. I didn't think you can get rid of acne. I didn't think you can get rid of being sick all the time. I was being around him slowly being like, hey, why aren't you eating that food? Hey, why don't you need that thing? And so I started becoming healthier because of just like being around him. But then I was also able to sneak in Wine Wednesday, Pizza Tuesday, talk, you know, all these different things that he was not used to having because he didn't want to be the weirdo. He didn't want to say when you first start dating someone, I don't do this, I don't do this, I don't have this, I don't have this, I have no fun, right? So he kind of put up with some of the stuff initially until as my health was slowly getting a little bit better, his was slowly getting worse being around me, and to a point where he was like, I can't keep eating like this, Lily. Like, my gut is getting destroyed. My skin is inflamed like galore. I can't keep doing this, and I need to go to a diet that I know is going to really heal my gut and make me feel better. And you can keep doing whatever you want to do, and I'll drive you to the donut shop, and I'll watch you eat a donut, or I'll take you to go get ice cream, but I'm just not going to partake in that. And I don't want you to copy me. I don't want you to do the thing that I'm doing. I just want you to be happy, and I'll support you in whatever way you do it. And I'm over here like, well, what the heck? That's not fun. I don't want to go and eat donuts by myself. I don't want to go and have an ice cream like that. So how did my relationship change with food? Completely. Like, this whole YouTube channel and the social media would not exist without him. Everything I've ever said in a video is solely because I have learned it from him. So he's like the behind the scenes person that nobody like, he doesn't get the credit, but literally if anyone's ever been like, I have benefited from your content, or I've changed my mind about this, that, and the other, it's all because of him.
That's so awesome. And I love the touch on that. That was powerful what you said then in terms of him getting influenced by you, right? You were eating mainly processed foods and then he got sucked into that. And that happens a lot, but I haven't really heard, it's normally, I mean, it happens to everyone, right? But I've heard it happen with, because like my ex-girlfriend, for example, like her ex used to eat like garbage all the time and she got sucked in a bit. But it's interesting to hear that he got sucked into that. And then he was just like, look, I'm feeling like absolute dog shit. Something needs to change here. So it goes to show the power of environment, right? Because there's like there was a study done on millions of people, and they found that basically if you've got a friend, a 20-year study, if you've got a friend who's obese, for example, you've got a 48% higher chance of being obese yourself. And even if you've got a friend of a friend, it's like a 20% higher chance. It's crazy, right? So obviously he got sucked into that. And how long was he sucked into that kind of lifestyle for before he went, you know what? My gut's falling apart. My skin's terrible. I got to sort my life out.
Yeah, not very long, honestly. It was like 6 months because, when I met him, he was 31. At that, earlier in his young 20s, he was very healthy. He was always into like the bodybuilding fitness kind of world, but, you know, six meals a day, chicken, rice, broccoli, like very bodybuilder kind of type of diet. And then he was doing really well. He had lots of energy, strength, feeling amazing, had the physique he wanted. And then he was like, okay, cool. I'm in my young 20s now, and my health is so amazing. I want to optimize my health. So how can I do that? So he started going online and hearing about, at that time, a plant-based diet. So he was like, okay, I'm going to try this all fruit, fruitarian diet, and only eat fruit. And that only lasted for a few months before he lost 40 pounds of muscle, had gout, had all this problems. So he said, okay, maybe I should add in vegetables. So then he started doing vegan. Did that. Nope. Now I'm having skin inflammation, IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, leaky gut. Okay, maybe I should add in a little bit of like the fish and eggs and be vegetarian. Okay, I'm not getting promoted at my jobs because people are judging me based on my appearance, that I'm too lean, too skinny, have no muscle. As a gentleman, I'm sure you recognize that when you have more muscle and more size, you get more respect. People look at you differently. So no matter if you are a heavy, overweight person, then you feel judgment and you get bullied. If you're a lean, skinny, tiny chicken legs girl with flat chest and no booty, you get teased and feel the unlove. And if you're a man who has no muscle, you feel unloved. So a lot of people, I'm assuming everyone in life has felt at some point that they are judged based off of how they look. And unfortunately, that is kind of the way society is set up. Yet at the same time, I don't think that people actually judge you as much as you think that you do. I think we judge ourselves more, and then we put it out there, and our energy that we put out into the world makes people then treat us the way that we are putting ourselves out there. Because I think, like, I could absolutely walk with confidence being overweight or lean or everywhere in between, and get a different level of respect if I were to hunch my shoulders forward and feel unconfident and talk, you know, in a way in which it shows that I am putting the energies in where people are going to be coming at me with whatever talk or way that they're going to now navigate the conversation with me based on the way that I present myself. Anyway.
So you just reminded me of something as well, right? And then your husband pulls your shoulders back, right? What are your bad habits? We'll talk about that. I want to discuss some of your bad habits at the end, right? But you just reminded me of the hunchback of
Notre Dame, yeah. So anyway. Yeah, basically, he had already like damaged his gut pretty badly doing a plant-based diet. Now, it may work for other people, but in his experience, it completely destroyed his health. He was a healthy individual prior and then just wanted to optimize his health, so decided to try the plant-based healthy diet and ended up completely tanking his hormones, his skin health, his digestion. And so he had to find a way to heal now what was the damage done. And he found that actually a ketogenic diet, so at that time, this is like 8 years ago, it was Thomas DeLaller, Keto Savage, Robert Sykes, Logan Delgado, Goody Beats, and Jason Whitrock, the Blood Sugar King, who were four gentlemen who were showing that you can still have muscle and size doing a ketogenic diet, which was mind-blowing to somebody who had been taught that you want to eat lots of carbohydrates to have muscle and size. Now, I absolutely think you can have muscle and size eating carbohydrates and be a healthy person, but it was just a paradigm shift to think that you can also do that without having all those carbs. So he healed his gut with a ketogenic diet, and then he ended up meeting me. Hello. Who was eating a processed junk food diet, and that's where his health tanked. And once his health tanked, he said, you know, I got to go back to keto just to heal and seal my gut. And once he had fixed his gut doing more of a ketogenic approach, now he's able to have more flexibility in what he does with his health more. So
that's awesome. And it's so interesting. People don't realize that, you know, a lot of us, right? Let's be honest, we're all a bit screwed up, right? You know, when you get into like, when we get into, people look at people, I'm sounding big headed now, but the reality is I've been lifting weights for like 2 decades, much like your husband, you know, super advanced in my training, nutrition and everything else. You're in great shape. But people don't realize we've actually been through a lot of shit and we've gone so extreme. I'm not going to talk about my stuff. I've talked about all the time, my binge eating and stuff from bodybuilding. And you mentioned about aesthetics then and getting judged on how you look. And I used to be super shredded, literally like, I don't know, 4 or 5% body fat for stage. And people are like cheering you on saying, wow, that's amazing. But like, you're not healthy, right? You're not, you're literally 5% body fat. So it's very interesting, that psychology. But yeah, going to extremes, I've done the same as well. I've gone, you know, everywhere really. But I'd love to talk more about that in terms of the plant-based thing, right? Because that's why I switched over to the animal-based diet. It was about 4 years ago I switched over, and similar to your husband, I was getting a lot of gut issues. It wasn't extreme as the problems he was getting because I wasn't eating all plant-based. I was eating probably, though, at least half of my calories were coming from, I used to love eating vegetables. I was the guy who could eat bowls of like broccoli and cauliflower with olive oil and salt and genuinely enjoy it. I'd still enjoy it now if I ate it. But that and potatoes and stuff were just ruining my gut and my skin. So I had to make a change. So I'd love to know your journey. And obviously, probably going to bring your husband into this too as well, because he's had a similar journey by the sounds of it. What was your journey switching over to like the animal-based approach? And how long ago was that as well? And I'd love to just find out a bit more about your journey in terms of like the different types of diets you've tried and stuff.
Yeah, so I was pretty much just a processed junk food diet to then hearing about keto through my husband. And I was like, okay, so we're not buying bread this week. We're not going to have rice this month. okay, we're just not going to have dessert this week. You know, like, I didn't think this was like a long-term thing. I didn't know what it really meant. I just thought, okay, cool. We're going to have, like, instead of our sandwich, we're going to just have no bread with our sandwich. I actually at that time was doing more like replacement things. So instead of having like a tortilla, I would have like a cauliflower wrap. Instead of a pizza, I'd make a cauliflower pizza crust. So I turned into like the cauliflower girl, because it's like cauliflower rice. It's like, it's somehow in the keto world, like everything is cauliflower. So I was not doing it for weight loss. I was not doing it for mental health. I was not doing it for autoimmune conditions. I was just doing it simply because my husband and I cook together, grocery shop, clean together, eat together, and it was just convenient and easy. And then in doing so, I actually ended up finding benefits. I was like, what? I could have my joint pain go away? What? I don't have to get sick all the time? Who would have thought these processed foods were doing that? My menstrual cycle is now going to become regular again. I'm not going to have clotting and cramping and all the crazy things that you don't have to deal with as a gentleman, but as a lady, you have these like really intense mood swings and crying spasms, and like you don't have control over your emotions because we're on this roller coaster of blood sugar crashes and spikes due to having these processed foods. High in sugar brings us, gives us that energy, and then we have that crash and we're like, I need to take a nap, like I don't know what happened, and we just think, oh, it's because I have a busy day, I didn't sleep well the night before. Well, I figured out actually it was because I was eating a bunch of junk. So he was doing more keto to heal his gut, and I was just doing it because I was like, okay, well, it's just what's on my plate, so I'm going to eat it. And I loved the food that he was making. And then he actually ended up finding out, he was like, I really don't think this asparagus is agreeing with me, Lily. I don't think the broccoli is, it's still messing up my digestion. I think the carrots are not doing well with me. So he slowly started removing the vegetables, and I was like, well, that's not fair. You get to have more bacon on your plate, and meanwhile, I got to be eating all this cauliflower rice. So slowly, I just started removing some veggies from my plate as well. And then I removed fruit at a certain point just to see, like, I felt like I had, like, some sugar cravings and sugar addiction where I was like, I need to have dessert. And so I actually did it totally backwards. I kept dessert. I kept Oreos and cookies and things like that. And I removed fruit. So I was like, well, fruit has sugar in it, so I'll just remove the fruit, get used to a life like that, and then I'll move to the actual hard part. But yeah, then I ended up getting off of my sugar roller coaster, getting rid of the sugar cravings, and then ended up losing weight, wasn't trying to. And then I had all these other benefits, like I said, menstrual cycle related, hormones related, skin inflammation, acne, sicknesses, things like that. So I ended up going on social media being like, hey, I eat just like at that point, like a carnivore diet, because I wasn't having any fruits or any veggies. And things have changed over the years now. So to answer your question of when this all started, it would have been about four years ago, I would have been slowly removing my junk food. So I was probably more getting into low carb around 4 years, but then 3.5 being like, yep, I'm doing keto. And then probably 3 years ago being like, I'm doing carnivore. Not even knowing that I was doing carnivore, didn't hear the word, didn't know I was doing carnivore. I just had no more avocados for sale at Costco, so I was like eating just meat. And then I'm very lucky and very blessed that I didn't have huge autoimmune conditions and gut issues with fruits and veggies. And I think that now that's why I've been kind of shifting with my content on how I want to approach and explain things, because I find that people think that like I think that plants are going to kill you, carbs are toxic, you're going to die if you eat a broccoli. And like, that's not my intention. My intention is just to, I was just doing things out of minimalism. And I like the taste of meat. You can get tons of vitamins, minerals, and nutrients from meat. But I think it's got to a point where people are confusing what I'm trying to advocate for health.
100%. And I was saying this to Courtney Luna. You know of Courtney Luna, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had him on the podcast this week as well. And we were talking about a similar thing. But it's like, that's what I like about the likes of, Sean Baker, for example, right? Even though he just eats meat and salt, pretty much. Mm-hmm. He never says plants are going to kill you and everything else. Right now, it is good to be aware of the defense chemicals and any immune issues you might get with plants, 100%. But just the way you communicate it, and if we're speaking to the average person, right?
Right.
It's just splitting hairs for them, isn't it? To say, okay, well, the plants are going to kill you, broccoli's bad for you. No, actually, all of that's going to be way better than all the other crap that you're eating, right?
Yes.
And talking on sugar cravings as well, I think a lot of people can relate to that. So you would say now, because I'm in the same kind of position where I don't get sugar cravings anymore, I enjoy everything I eat, and I eat similar to yourself. I know you eat meat, you eat some fruit and everything else. I saw some of your stuff and I eat very similar. I eat seasonal fruit. Luckily, I live in Australia, right? So we get a lot of good quality produce here. and I eat mainly meat. I need to eat more organs. I keep forgetting about that. Actually, I saw one of your posts and I was like, yeah, why have I stopped eating liver and heart again? I just forgot about it. I love Scotch fillet steak so much. But it is important to get that message out there, where it's like, if you're eating single ingredient foods, mm-hmm. in other words, whole foods, at least 90% of the time, it's kind of hard to go wrong, right?
Totally.
But when you do eat high protein as well, like us, and you're eating, you know, the most nutrient dense meats as well, like grass fed beef, for example, naturally you just don't have as much cravings, right?
Right. Exactly. So that was a big thing to help me with my cravings. And then the other thing was just like, actually had to do it kind of like in bite size. Like I couldn't just, some people I know, they rip it off like a band-aid. They're eating junk food and then like, I'm going carnivore. And I'm like, whoa, I did not do that. I eased into it very, very gradually and tiptoed into it. So I actually had these dark chocolate bars. I hate dark chocolate, but I just thought, hey, at least it's convincing me that I'm like eating candy, but I knew that it was like a healthier version of candy. So I had these little dark chocolate squares. They were small. And I said, okay, I'm going to have one of these as my dessert each night and get really good at doing that instead of having plus cookies, plus pie, plus brownies, right? So I got really good at having just one square of chocolate each night. And then once I said I got good at that, I said, okay, I'm just going to have half. So I got really good at doing half. And then I said, okay, now I'm going to do a quarter. I got really good at doing quarter. Now just every other day. Now just one time a week. And it got to the point where I'm like, I don't even like this anyway. Like, I don't even need this. So yeah, for me, my form of dessert is fruit. I did the strict carnivore thing. I understand that the benefits to it for the people who may need to be more strict. But for me, I do like to end my night on something sweet. I do like to have that piece of fruit as just enjoyment, not that I'm like getting tons and tons of vitamins and minerals from fruit. Yeah, sure, potassium, magnesium, some good electrolytes from fruit. But in general, I'm mainly doing it for taste and pleasure. And I think that, you know, it's hard because people say like everything in moderation or like the balance of life. And then people blow that out of proportion to meaning, okay, so I'm going to have an alcoholic beverage every week and therefore a slice of pie every week and get the thing where every day they get to have the thing that is so fun to give them the balance and moderation. And again, if we're talking, like you said, whole foods, I think like if my like balance in life is having an apple, it's not, you know, it's really good for my actual mental health, because I felt like if I was doing strict carnivore, it's like, don't have some onion powder on your ground beef because that's a plant. And it just got to a point where I'm like, I feel like I'm falling into like those stuff I'm seeing online, which I think is a little bit, you know, not as logical if you start running through it. Like, did humans ever eat plants in their lifetime? Okay, did they have? So like I spoke with Dr. Sean Baker a couple of years ago and I asked him, I said, why do you think that so many people nowadays seem to have a problem with the small amounts of toxins in plants nowadays? Like someone like Kayla Peterson can't have just a little bit of black pepper on her steak. She's going to have her arthritic pain come back. Someone else, they're going to have their mental health issues come back. And Dr. Sean Baker said, Lily, people should be able to tolerate the small amounts of toxins in plants. However, nowadays, our guts are just so much more different than they were even just 100 years ago. We're exposed to 5G, EMFs, radiation, vaccines, antibiotics, pesticides, herbicides, glyphosate, cigarettes, alcohol, processed junk foods, canola oil. That nowadays, even when a baby is born into this world, their mom likely ate some processed junk food, was, you know, drinking something, eating something, smoking something. So that the baby nowadays is born into a world where they're already kind of at a compromised system, where their gut isn't as strong and robust as it used to be, where now some people, they find that that small amount of plant foods, like some seasonings or some mustard, causes them a huge autoimmune response. Then now that's not supposed to be the case. Humans are not supposed to be as like fragile is like diminishing the way that these people are feeling, but truthfully, like we should be strong enough to be able to handle the small amounts of toxins and plants, and some people they just may not be able to nowadays just because of the circumstances in our environment, unfortunately, nowadays.
Such a good point you made there, right? That was really well explained in terms of what Dr. Sean Baker said there. Well, nowadays all the things we're exposed to and everything else, and when the baby's born, it's gut flora, it's kind of on the back foot already, right?
Yep.
And even he was saying something really interesting on the Joe Rogan podcast, a recent one actually. He was saying about there's now research to show when you eat food, you actually metabolize, you actually eat something like 20 on average, 22%. You consume 22% more calories when you're eating certain ultra processed foods because it just bypasses the gut. Whereas when you're eating generally whole foods and meat and stuff like that, you actually consume less calories because your gut actually absorbs a lot of it and holds on to a lot of it or whatever. So that's really, really interesting. But yeah, I'd love to talk about, because I know you're a coach, and some of the biggest challenges, right? I think this is going to be really, really, we could talk forever about this, right? But it's going to be really helpful for the audience as well. In terms of like the biggest challenges you face, now, environment, I just mentioned about the obesity thing, right? And I know you said before, about, you know, the biggest reason why people don't get in shape. It's like, you know, you might have some clients, they're super focused, they're eating their meals, they're on the ball, they're showing up in the gym, they're getting results. And then before you know it, they're around certain people, like it might be on the weekends or some sort of social thing. And then they start making poor decisions. They get the peer pressure, you know, and they just kind of crack. And then, you know what it's like, the all or nothing mentality, or, you know, that kind of thing is very common. I used to struggle with this myself. I'm sure you've been there, right? Whereas I'm all in or I'm all out. And a lot of people struggle with that. And they get that peer pressure. They're in the wrong environment. They make a few poor decisions and they go, nah, I'll get back to it Monday. And they kind of chase their tail a bit, right? So would you say environment and social influence is one of the biggest kind of obstacles for people you face, or for people you coach, sorry?
Yeah, 1,000%. I have actually, now this is like not a funny joke, but it's kind of true. I made a TikTok reel that was about how the number one thing that makes people fat is having friends. Because when you have friends, like, you know, if you drink and now you drink, when you have your drink, you get, you know, your brain doesn't work as well. So you decide you're going to start eating more processed foods or whatever the thing is. But just to fit in. And in society nowadays, like, that is what you eat at work events, on vacation, when you're socializing at restaurants. And so I think like a really great place to find friends is at the gym. So like if you see someone who's constantly showing up and they're always there, then it makes you, you already know something about that person, that they're committed, that they are, you know, trying to better their health and better their life. And some, you know, when people go and they exercise, they have less, you know, it's supposed to help you have less stress, less anxiety, less depression. It's supposed to help with your brain, your heart, your digestion, your mood, your sleep, your energy, your everything. And so I think if you see someone who's constantly showing up, that tells you a lot about their character and that person. So I think like you said, surrounding yourself with the people who are going to be okay with even saying, hey, we don't actually want to go out to eat. Like we have friends here who they are on the same page as far as like, yeah, we don't really want to like go and spend $70 on a steak when we can like make one at home. So we will have them over for steaks and we can like be able to, and everyone, you know, then we get to play games and have conversation. And I know that's not like the typical thing people do. Mostly people want to go out to eat or they want to go to bowling and drink alcohol. But there's so many activities that people can do other than food related activities, even like you can go hiking, you can go biking, you can go painting. I've done like a, like they have like the ceramic thing and you paint the ceramic thing with people. So anyway, there's like different opportunities and things that are social events that don't necessarily involve food, but then also just telling and being very candid and honest with the person. Hey, I don't feel very well when I eat these things, so I'm not going to do it. And most people, they will understand and they'll recognize and they'll, especially if you say like, oh, I have an allergy or I really like really messes up my stomach or I get really bad skin inflammation or whatever the thing is. Most people are understanding and they're not going to be like, too bad, eat it. And then if you are around that person who is going to like judge you or make you feel awkward, because I'll be honest, I lost several friends eating like healthier, like because I'm no longer fun to go out to have ice cream, right? I'm not the person who's going to go out and drink. So, but those weren't the people who I wanted to surround myself with anyway. So there's definitely like-minded people and people who are willing to eat the thing or to not eat around you. And that's okay too. And then what you put into your house. So if you are buying like as soon as you go to the grocery store, you have all the options. And then what you put in your cart is what you're going to have in your house. And if you have it in the house, you're likely going to eat it. You spent the money, you spent the time, and it's staring at you. So just don't bring it in the house. And then give yourself grace if you are going to have the thing. Like, I don't think that we have to be perfect all the time. But if you have the thing, but I have so many clients who they have the thing and they beat themselves up about it. And they're like, ah, I wasn't supposed to, it didn't make me feel good, and I didn't enjoy it in the process, and I beat myself up about it for days on end. Don't keep, enjoy it when you do it, and then just say, okay, well, next time I'm going to do the thing that I know is going to make me feel better. But yeah, I think environment shapes so much of who we are. They say the five people you surround yourself with are the average of who you will be and become. So this is not just related to food, but your finances, your relationships, your personality. If you're around people who are complainers, who are lazy, who are poor mindset, but also, you know, like in all the different ways, then that's who you will likely become. And so it might be hard to separate yourself from certain friends who you've had for decades or for so many years. You've had this strong relationship and it's really, really hard to let those go. But who, you know, are you, you're sacrificing your life in a certain aspect. Like, I was around people who were, every time they would call, I'm like, oh gosh, I got to answer the phone for this person. They're going to bring me down. And I get off the phone and be like, oh, that was so annoying. Like that person brought me down and brought down my energy. And I'm like, why do I keep answering the phone? Yeah, you know who you're around who's bringing you down, and you know who's around who's bringing you up. And if you don't have anyone bringing you up, there's definitely people out there, and you just have to look for them. It takes a little bit of effort, but it's worth it. Like, you know, 100%. There's always, nothing easy in life is usually pretty good. You know, most things in life that are hard or challenging push us to grow, evolve, and become better people. And so I think that while change is really hard, it ends up making us have a life that we, if you have a life right now that you absolutely love, then don't change anything. But if you have things about your life that you don't like, then doing the same thing is not going to change anything.
Definition of insanity, isn't it? According to Albert Einstein, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. It's funny how we all know that. I say this every time, but we all know, everyone knows that quote, right? In terms of you become an average of the five people you spend the most time with, but then people still surround themselves with people who don't share the same values, or, you know, for lack of a better word, dickheads, right? They surround themselves with dickheads and then they expect not to rub off on them. But I just, something you said then as well, someone just came back to me. My mum's visiting here in Australia from the UK for a month. And we went to a cafe the other week, and I didn't want, and like yourself, right? I'm starting to sound like a stalker now, to be honest, right? The amount of things you're saying, I'm like, yeah, I've seen that. I did a bit of preparation for this podcast, starting to sound like I'm stalking you now. But you did say something like, you know, I eat out on average like 3 times a year. And you said, you know, you'll go and eat out and you enjoy the experience and the environment, but then it's like you know you could actually have more pleasure from eating your own food. And I feel exactly the same. But I was with my mum last week and I thought, I'm just going to enjoy this moment. She wanted to get some food, so I'm just going to sit down and eat some food with my mum for the experience. And it was great. And I ordered an omelette, and I said to the woman, I don't want, and I had to say what you said then, right? I had to exaggerate and say, look, if I have vegetable oil, I'm going to get really sick. You know, it's not good. Because she assumed when I said, oh, what do you cook it in? And she was like, do you want vegetable oil? Yes, you want me to cook it in vegetable? People think that's healthy. So she actually thought, she genuinely thought like canola oil was healthy. I was like, no, the opposite to that. No vegetable oil, because I get really sick. I had to like play on it a bit. Yeah. So that came back to me and it was all good. But I just wanted to kind of talk about what you said then in terms of environment being so important. You briefly touched on preparation, right? And placing a barrier in the way. That's what I say to clients, right? Get the food out of the house. In fact, what I've done before with certain clients, a strategy, is I've said to them, right, if you want to have that food, if you want to go and have, you know, a chocolate bar after you've had your dinner or whatever, I'm giving you permission to actually go to the, if they don't live, I have one client that had a shop right downstairs, so this is not going to work in that case. But if there's a barrier in the way in terms of they have to get in the car, go to the shopping center and everything else, I'll say, you've got permission to do that after you've eaten, but don't keep it in the house. And then so then they've got the permission to do it. They're like, okay, if I want to do it, I can do it. And then obviously they wouldn't, like 90% of the time, they wouldn't get in the car in the evening, drive to the shop to get one chocolate. They just left it out. But you talk about, you know, preparation, right? Because I had a new client who started last week, and he was, you know what it's like? I don't know if you get this, but people come to you and they're so confused with the nutrition piece. Oh my God, they're so overwhelmed. He came to me and I was like, yeah. I said, okay, because he travels a lot with work, this one guy. And I said to him, do you like eating beef? And he's like, most people say yes. And like Sean Baker said, right, if you don't enjoy eating ribeye steak, you got dropped on your head as a kid. I love that. So I said that straight to him. I said, thank God for that, because you definitely got dropped on your head as a kid if you don't enjoy eating ribeye steak. But he basically, I said, you know, how can we make this simple? Beef mince. Right? Ground beef, can you do that? And I give him like a very simple recipe with ground beef, adding some spices and everything else. Cooked it up. He was on the road with work. He was eating it. He said, mate, I really enjoy this. Man, this feels really easy. Obviously, it's going to get more challenging. It needs to be sustainable. It's only his first week. But he was just shocked that he can just eat beef mince and it tastes great and he enjoys it. But it's simple things like that. Because I had this question from someone to cover this on the podcast, a few people, in terms of, you know, when they're on the go, they're traveling with work and they're cut for time. They might have kids and everything else. How not to make poor decisions and eat, you know, processed foods, and what they can put in place to do that. But simple things like having beef mince. I did this the other day as well. I went to the city and I just got like a kilo of beef mince. I think I cooked like a kilo, and I took like, I don't know, 700 grams to the city with me, and I had an avocado with it, loads of salt, tasted great. I was fine. But simple methods like that can be really helpful, right? I know it depends on the person, because it's what that person's going to actually enjoy eating. But simple stuff like that goes a long way, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even to finish on the environment thing too, it's like you kind of have to be very intentional with your actions, because nowadays everything is set up against you in terms of like you are being bombarded constantly with advertisements. You go on social media, eat the pretty cute acai bowl with the cake and the ice cream cone or whatever, right? So it's like on social media, it's in the hospitals, in our vending machines, it is on the advertisements when you're driving down the street, it's at work, it's all over the place, this processed junk food. And so you have to make it a habit to not have it in your face and to put the other things in your face. Follow the thing on Instagram that's going to be the steak or whatever it is that you gravitate most towards. But then even surrounding yourself, like if you don't have anyone physically present in your life today who is more supportive, there are so many people online who can be that friend and can be that voice. And so you have to put it in your ears, put it in your eyes, and put it in your space. Because if you don't, we already know what's going to be put inside your ears, eyes, and face based on just the way our society is set up nowadays.
100%. And that is part of your diet, right? If we're honest, you have nutrition, what you put in your mouth, also what you actually absorb through social media and people around you and everything else. That's actually part of your diet, because that's going to have a massive impact in terms of how you think, you know, your education. And a lot of it comes down to, I don't know if you find this, it's like unlearning things, right? When it comes to nutrition, especially because people have got all these things in their head. And actually, when you strip everything back, it's actually quite simple what to do. And I think the funny thing is, most people kind of know what to do, but they're just confused, overwhelmed, they're not taking action, they're not getting momentum, and then they end up just, you know, spinning their wheels. So when you want to go with just like a simple kind of, tactical bit of advice for the audience, because a lot of people, they travel for work, they're busy, they've got kids, everything else. And they always say, you know, do you get this? Or can you give me an example of some good snacks? And the way I describe it is, I'm like, look, we can have snacks, I can give you some ideas and stuff, but it's either complete meals or complete food or incomplete food, you know what I mean? And majority of the time when people are snacking, it's just fat and sugar mainly, right? And it's processed food, just food that you don't really need. So how do you kind of advise that to people? I'm sure you get that question, you know, what can I do for a snack? Obviously, beef jerky is a good one, right? But I always say just having complete meals with you as much as you can when that's possible is going to be the best decision, you know?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. If anyone says like, oh, I have to have snacks, I would say you have to eat more at your previous meal. So if you need a snack in between lunch and dinner, you need to eat more at dinner. And otherwise, like if you really need like a snack, then hard-boiled eggs, cheese, like you said, beef jerky. In the U.S., we have these things called carnivore bars, which are just like meat and tallow, or carnivore crisp, or cheese wisp, or there's different like cheese crackers and things that are just like cheese. Because I know sometimes people just like to have like the crunchy things. So pork rinds, chicharrones. And then as far as like what I personally do when I am traveling, I will take things like sardines or oysters that come in a can. I have taken through TSA like bricks of butter, blocks of cheese. But then, like you say, I will do the similar thing of just like we will make a pound of meat each. I've done ground beef, ground chicken, ground pork, ground lamb, ground turkey. And so we each make a pound of meat and then we put it in the fridge the next day, whether we are traveling in our car so we can put it in actually a cooler, or if we are going in the airport, we'll take that through TSA. And then as long as you eat it within like a few hours, you know, of it being out of the fridge, it shouldn't be that big of a deal. Now, I wouldn't like eat it in a day, but we just put salt on top and that's like our go-to meal.
Fantastic. Yes, it's really, really simple, you know, boiled eggs, those kind of things, right? And I need to check out those bars actually, because I know Anthony Chafee, I know you've had a collaboration with him. He's here in Australia and he mentioned a company as well. I should actually look into that and maybe recommend that to clients. But very simple, see? And you're always satisfied, right? For me, my best friend is, you know, avocados when I have my beef mince, if I'm going to eat. I'm happy to eat food cold, by the way. I'm not sure about you.
Yeah.
Do you like it? Yeah, same. It's weird, isn't it? You actually start enjoying it. It does, doesn't it? I love it when I mix an avocado with beef mince, cold, loads of salt. I'm like, this is amazing. And people are listening. When you mentioned the sardines thing, people are listening going, oh, God, how does she deal with that with her breath? Poor husband.
Oh, yeah, in the airplane when you have the sardines and the hard-boiled eggs, it sounds, you know, smells like, just let it go. No, but we love sardines. They're so good. I know people think, like, before they've tasted them, huh? Oftentimes people are hating on them without trying them, but once you try it, they are. If you've ever had tuna fish, like, most people have had tuna, and they're like, oh, yeah, I can get down with tuna. Same thing with sardines. You just put some mustard or some ghee or some hot sauce or tomato sauce or pesto or whatever you want to mix them with, I can just eat them out of a can straight and they taste delicious to me, but they taste like fish.
100%. I love sardines as well, actually. And again, I'm thinking, why have I stopped eating sardines? I actually really enjoy them and they're good for you. I don't know why. Because I love steak so much. That's where it is. I just can't get enough of it. You know, I eat probably around about 1.2 kilos. You guys do pounds, don't you? Probably like 2.7 pounds of beef a day. And that's pretty much the only kind of protein I eat. But I was going to ask you, because I think we've covered it anyway, but what stands out to you, being a nutrition and lifestyle coach, what stands out to you as the biggest challenge you see, the most common obstacle you see people face that you coach? We probably covered it already, haven't we, with environment and those kind of things. But is there anything else that stands out to you in terms of, you know, because just hitting protein for a lot of people is challenging based on my experience, you know? Depending on who you coach, of course, you know?
Yes. So I would say definitely, like, for the average person listening, they're likely not eating enough protein. So that's be something that I'd start with. And so, again, that could just mean if you are somebody who likes to eat salads, hey, cool, let's put some chicken in that salad or some hard-boiled eggs or some, you know, I honestly don't eat too many salads, so I don't know what people are putting, shrimp.
Shrimp, nice. That's a good shout.
Yeah, add any kind of, like, protein to the meal that you're eating, because, like, if someone's having toast for breakfast, okay, you know, let's not really focus on, like, taking food away as much as I just want to, like, put more protein in, because if I can, like, especially with things like sugar, I find that if I say, hey, keep eating as much sugar as you want, keep doing it, but you got to hit a certain amount of protein, you're naturally going to eat less sugar because you are going to be so stuffed and so full with all the protein that it's going to be hard for you to continue eating as much sugar. So even, like, I'm not a huge protein powder kind of person because I do want to have, like, the mastication and actually the whole food form of protein. But I understand it's very convenient and easy and quick. And regardless, most people are very deficient in protein, that please do some protein powder with your breakfast or as a meal on the go. Put it in your coffee, something like that. But I would actually say one of the other big things I see as, like, a setback or something that I personally do, like, a lot of times coaching with is oftentimes people – I work with a lot of older people as well, and so that they will have done a diet in the past, and then they lost some weight, but they didn't lose all the weight they wanted to lose yet, so then they did another diet to lose weight, and another diet, and another diet, and another diet, and now their metabolism is totally tanked, and they're coming to me, and they're like, Lily, I'm eating 800 calories, and I'm not losing weight. And so I think, like, sometimes people go down this metabolism spiral hole where they just keep cutting their calories, cutting, and they never gave their bodies a chance to come out of diet mode and to do what, in the bodybuilding world, people use the word bulk, reverse diet, or to go in a calorie surplus and actually, like, come out of diet mode and to do a refeed. So I work with a lot of people who they really have a really slow metabolism. So I slowly increase their food intake very, very gradually so they don't gain weight, but so that they can boost their metabolism and go back to a healthy maintenance amount of food to be eating before we can go back down into diet mode and cut our calories again and see weight loss. So I find, particularly with my weight loss people, oftentimes they are already in a calorie deficit and they are not losing weight. And the answer is to not further cut calories. Sure, if you want to, like, I mean, you could theoretically do it to lose more weight, but in the long term, that can, we are in a chronically calorie deficited state, it can lead to things like loss of hair, low testosterone, loss of muscle, low energy, poor sleep, brain fog, fatigue, hormonal imbalances, thyroid becomes impaired. So there's different very serious health implications that come from starving our bodies and not giving ourselves all the vitamins and minerals and proteins and healthy fats that our bodies need to thrive, survive, and to feeling amazing. So I would definitely say one of the other big setbacks is, now maybe going to confuse people, but it's like, if you're eating processed food, first step, eat whole foods. And if you're someone who's like, I've been eating whole foods, but I feel like trash eating whole foods, it may just be that you're not eating enough of the foods. And maybe it's time to come out of that very deficited state that I see so many people in.
See, ladies and gents, what you're listening to right there is an absolutely superb coach, right? Because the approach that you take is exactly the same as me. I'm not sure about you, but pretty much everyone I take on is reverse dieting straight away. Mm-hmm. It's doing exactly what you said. Their weight's not changing much. You know, it's interesting, right? It's a challenging conversation. Someone comes to you, I want to lose 30 pounds. Okay, so what we're going to do is not lose weight for the next 3 months minimum, yeah, right? And basically, we're going to slowly increase calories. Increase? I don't want to get
fired. You're fired.
The thing is, yeah, exactly. You're fired. That's it. I'm done. And that's exactly what literally everyone needs to do, or most people, not everyone, most people need to do. They want to lose body fat. They've been struggling in this vicious cycle for years and years of losing weight, gaining it back, losing weight, gaining it back. And then what's happened is the metabolism has done what it should be doing, by the way, keeping you alive. And basically it's underdeveloped. Your metabolism is underdeveloped, is the way I describe it. And it's running slow. And essentially your maintenance calories are super low. And as you say, what are you going to do? They come to you, their maintenance calories are, you know, 1200. just exactly what you said then. I want to lose weight. Okay, so what do we do? Go down to 800 calories? And the funny thing is, the worrying thing is, there's a lot of, and I'm not trying to hate, but there's a lot of coaches out there that actually make the problem worse. So I'm really glad we're having this conversation because, you know, that is what you should be doing. And you mentioned also about, the new client that I took on the other day. It's so important what you said there in terms of not taking away. And we literally had our first call the other day, jumped on the call, group coaching call. And he was like, okay, bread. So I need to cut bread out, right? I was like, no, look, ideally, I want to get you to a place where you detach from bread. Yes, only because it's a processed food and it becomes a habit. So what you find is when you eat bread, you probably had this. I used to have it, right? Everything I used to eat was bread, right? It's just bread with everything. It's devoid of nutrients. You don't need it, right? But that's fine. Don't take it away for now. All I want you to focus on is, can you eat this much beef? I said to him, he was like, yeah, I can do that. Great, let's start there. And he's been, like, it's only the first week, of course. He's been doing it really, really easy. And, you know, because people always look at it like, right, I need to lose weight, so I've got to take away. But that is not sustainable. You know, you've probably, listening back to this, you've probably tried it loads of times. I'm going to cut sugar out. I'm going to cut bread out. And what happened for most people is the second you go back to old behaviors or in the wrong environment, going to our point, you're back to square one again. So I love that. It's so important for people to hear that you, like, a good coach is always going to be saying, right, depending on what your goal is, of course. Okay, we're going to be adding these things in. We're going to be hitting this target of protein to start with. Then we have a look at the quality of, we straight away look at the quality of food you're eating, like you mentioned, whole foods. And then we need to be making sure we're hitting a protein target. Then it's like, okay, are you getting the essential fats that you need? And the good thing is you get most of that through animal-based foods anyway, pretty much all of it. So love what you were talking about there, that reverse dieting process, or just, let's just not even say reverse dieting. It's building your metabolism up. And I say to people, Lily, I want to get you to a place, exactly what you were saying there, where you literally turn around and say to me, Martin, I cannot get any more food in now. This is literally annoying me. It's a full-time job and I can't get enough food. And I'm like, great. Now we're at that place now where we can decide, we can talk about doing a mini cut and we can, you know, take away some food that you were struggling to get in anyway. And then they naturally start to lose a bit of body fat then, you know?
So when someone's trying to lose weight and you've reverse dieted them and you've got them eating more of a healthy amount of food, so what? How much of a percentage do you cut their calories?
So how much of a percentage do I cut them once I've built the metabolism up and everything else?
Yeah, I'm just
else?
Curious. I, you know.
Yeah, I'll go for the minimum to start with, really. So it'll probably be between about 10 and 15% below their maintenance calories to start with and see how they go from there, you know? Cool. But no cardio as well. Again, you probably... I mean, cardio is good. I know you've started doing some cardio lately, but cardio is good, you know, for health and everything else and longevity. But when it comes to sustainable fat loss, it's ineffective, essentially, in my opinion, you know, for sustainable fat loss, if you're overdoing it anyway, because you want to be sending that signal of, you know, building muscle, pro tissue and speeding your metabolism up. And all that's going to be done through, you know, strength training and nutrition. So yeah, I cut it minimal, you know, make sure that they're moving plenty as well. So it's, again, they've cemented in these habits, like they do a good amount of steps and movement. So, you know, they're burning a lot of calories naturally. Then their body's automatically burning a lot of calories from simply just building muscle and getting stronger and eating high protein. But I try to keep it minimal. What about yourself? When you, I know it depends on the person, but do you have like an amount that you kind of restrict?
Yeah, it depends on, I think, like where, like what's the size of the human, right? So if someone's like a 6'4" gentleman who's eating like, let's call it 3,500 calories to maintain their weight or something like that, then I would cut, like you said, like 15%. And they would, you know, that would be like a significant amount. Maybe like, I don't know, off the top of my head, what is that, like 400 calories, 500 calories? I don't know, don't quote me on it.
Right about that, yeah.
It's enough. Whereas for somebody who's maybe they're like an older lady, she's 60, she doesn't exercise very much, she's 5'2", and she is only has like 10 pounds to lose, it's gonna be harder for her to lose some weight. So if her maintenance is like 2,000, I might cut her like 20%. So it kind of just depends on the target. So anywhere from like 15 to 20 is more what I try to do.
Yeah, love that. And then they see results straight away. They see the fat coming off. And how many times you get this as well? I see this happen time and time again within the first kind of, it depends on the person and how much of a reservoir of fat they've got to lose. But say within the first kind of 1 to 3 months, they get this lovely little exchange where they're building muscle and losing body fat simultaneously. And they're like, my clothes are fitting better. I'm getting stronger. I'm building muscle. I feel like I'm eating more. I don't feel deprived. I'm actually dropping a bit of fat as well. Do you ever get that?
Yeah. You know, I don't know what the percentage of people is, but there's definitely a good percentage of people who I don't actually have to even cut their calories and they're losing weight. Like I will be reverse dieting them and they're losing weight as they reverse diet. So, like you said, I have people who they are saying, I feel like lighter as I walk. And why is that? Well, when you build more muscle, then it's easier for you to walk. Even something so simple and small like that, like standing up out of your chair is easier Because when you have less of a load, less fat, and less, and you have more muscle that can help you get up out of the chair, then everything just seems a little bit lighter and easier to move. My husband and I have a weighted vest, and so we will do walks around our neighborhood, and we have this weighted vest that's like 50 pounds. And so one day he's like walking with it around. He goes, "This is what people feel like who have 50 extra pounds to move around and take that walk. You are heaving, you are feeling out of breath." And so for us, it may be really easy to say, "Oh yeah, just take a walk around the block." But when you have an extra 50 pounds on you or 100 pounds on you, it is not as easy, and it's definitely very hard on your knees, on your chest, on all parts of your body. So I definitely understand how much it is easier said than done for us people who are at the goal weight that we would like to be. But yeah, the more that you can focus on getting in protein and practicing standing whenever you can stand. I actually have a standing desk and I'm sitting right now, but I do try to like have a couple hours in a day to stand, and then anytime you can just do those micro moments of movement. So like when I do some, I have some clients who they have my phone number, not supposed to be that way, but we will talk and I will pace as I'm talking on the phone. So if you have people who you can like, if you call, have work business, or if you're talking to a friend, you can be pacing while you talk on the phone. Or like I said, if you stand, the more you can stand, the better. So even those small things, you
don't have to be
going to like the gym to like get movement in.
Such a good point. Yeah. And that's why I always say to clients, it's like, how much time do you spend sitting down? You know, even when people sometimes checking emails on their phone, they might go on social media. I've been a dickhead before, and I've gone, right, let me see your screens. I've been that guy. Let me see your screen time. Let's see how much you spend on certain apps. And you can just walk around. People think that it has to be, always has to be like an allocated walk. I've got to do a 30-minute walk. It's like, yeah, that's great if you can fit that in, but just move more regular. And for longevity as well, and you know, sitting's the new smoking and everything else. But I'm glad we just covered the big rocks there, right? Because it's like, if you can do a, and when I say strength training, it needs to be appropriate for what your goals are and how much stress your body can manage, right? Because a lot of people, they're going to the gym, but they're just doing like freestyle workouts. It's not appropriate. They're either overdoing it, or it's just not structured to maximize results. So I think strength training appropriately, movement like you just mentioned, hitting high protein and good quality food, and then obviously sleep. They're the big rocks. It's actually quite simple when you take everything away, but I think a lot of people, where they benefit from having guidance or a coach, is just to know what to implement so they can just literally do the work, because people get so overwhelmed, as we said. Hey, Lily, we're going to have to do a whole new podcast on that, or a collaboration where we talk about all that stuff there with reverse dieting, building muscle, metabolism. There's so much more I'd like to talk to you about. That was awesome. I really enjoyed it. Was there anything else you wanted to say on what we were talking about, or anything you wanted to... or anything you want to share with the audience in terms of like stuff you've got going on or anything like that?
I would just say my last piece of like advice or tidbit is to smile more. And like when you're walking by somebody on the street or in the grocery store, just like to give a smile, because you would be surprised by how much more happiness and joy you get by bringing other people happiness and joy. And, you know, I think nowadays we're all looking down on our phones, walking with our heads down. And if you could just say a hello or a hey, how's it going, or have a beautiful day, it can really make some people's days. Who they don't even, you know, I have people come up to us in the gym who don't know who we are, and they'll be like, "Hey, I just want to say I really appreciate your guys' energy. You guys are just always smiling and positive, and you guys make the gym look like really having a good time and fun, and it makes me actually want to keep coming up." Or I had people say, "Hey, I saw you do a pull-up," and I was like, "If this girl can do a pull-up, I got to try, and so you inspired me today to do my first pull-up." So you never know who's watching, you never know who's looking at you, And also, yeah, I think we forget to be happy, because we'll be happy when we lose the weight. We'll be happy when we get the job promotion. We'll be happy when we get the car, the girl, the husband, the whatever. And you can be happy today. So I think that's a big piece missing in our life, too, because happiness plays a role in our health.
I love that. Yeah, because I know you're big on gratitude, right? This is something I need to work on more. But those simple things are so, and it feels so good, doesn't it? Just being good to people. Like, you know, I'm blown away by when I get a coffee sometimes, like, how's your day going? And it's almost like they're like, oh my God, like he asked me how my day was. Because nowadays, again, we're just all just like robots a lot of the time on our phones, disconnected, you know? So I think those simple things go such a long way, and they make you feel good as well, don't they? When you put a smile on someone's face.
Yep.
Fantastic. I love that. I love finishing that with gratitude. So obviously I'll share this in the show notes and everything, Lily, but where can the audience find you?
I'm on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Lily Kane.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. Really, really enjoyed that conversation.
That was great. It was nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.